As climate-related events intensify, what will it mean for the insurance industry? Last year, payouts prompted by climate-related incidents totaled $2.4 trillion worldwide. Now, firms not only struggle to calculate risk, but also to figure out how to invest the money that customers pay them in premiums. That's how it works. Insurers invest those premiums, the money grows, and they then use it to pay off claims. But companies they invest in are now being hit by the climate crisis. The economist Mathieu Favas's recent look at this is dire. It's titled, Changing Weather Could Put Insurance Companies Out of Business. He says they need to reinvent themselves as crusaders against climate change. And Mathieu joins us from the Economist studio in London. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And you know, right at the outset, let's just throw out what some people may be thinking. Many people don't trust insurance companies. You know, they don't trust that they may be struggling financially. And if, say, an insurer began an ad campaign encouraging people to do more about climate change, Americans at least might see that as them trying to profit from disaster. So how do you picture this, what you say insurers should do?
I would say that if an insurer were to advertise and try and encourage consumers to do more about climate change, consumers could see already like an immediate benefit in that, in the sense that being less exposed to climate change, for example, if you build a flood wall or if you put some metallic shutters on your windows, that's doing something to protect yourself and that would lower your premiums. Now, insurance companies also could try and publicize more what risks are posed by climate change. So not just encourage you to do more, but also explain what's at stake and why they themselves are going to pay out more money. Mm. And that will induce at least a number of them not to, for example, to seek to buy houses in floodplains or on the coast, where they would be subject to pretty devastating losses if they were to pursue these projects.
Are you also saying that insurers should maybe raise the bar for who they insure? Should they start, you know, punishing people more for not protecting themselves against the climate that we know is here?
What they can definitely do is to offer discounts to people who do these things. But I don't think they should punish people who don't do them.
Yeah.
It's more that if it happens, it's probably going to be done in a fairly natural, organic way, in the sense that as insurers face higher payouts, they will themselves have to pay more to reinsurers, which are the insurers of the insurers. And to do that, they will have to raise their premiums. So this year, for example, in the US, this last quarter, property premiums have been rising by 10%, which is quite a lot, so double digits. And this, in turn, will provoke maybe three things. So either a consumer won't be able to afford paying these premiums, they will decide not to do it, or they will just decide that it's not worth it. Or insurers will perhaps try to lower the premium rises by extending exemptions or capping the payouts. And the third thing is regulators observing that premiums are rising may decide that there is a maximum level that the premiums can reach. They will seek to cap the premiums. That may have the effect as well that insurers will think it's no longer worth it for them to stay in business anymore.
Well, and you mentioned the people who may not be insured. Right now, the global gap, as you write, between total losses and insured losses, there's already a huge gap there, people who are uninsured. You know, how much should insurers use their clout to start twisting the arms of lawmakers?
Absolutely, yes. I would think so. They can do more. They are very big investors, the second largest in the world behind pension funds. And then the clout of this money that they invest can make or break companies, sectors, industries. They can twist the arms of lawmakers. They can twist the arms of businesses, too.
Yeah, well, and a lot of the companies they invest in are multinational firms dealing with property and infrastructure. So this is also hurting the insurance industry because the, you know, where they're investing to grow that money to pay themselves, but also to pay out the premiums, those companies are impacted by climate change.
That's right. It's a big risk for insurance companies and something they have to think about right now because typically they invest for very long periods of time. You know, it can be quite simple in that, for example, they can think about whether they should invest in fossil fuel producers. They can think about how the energy mix is going to evolve and whether this will impact their investments. But there are things that are far less predictable. So, for example, in Europe recently, we had a backlash against airlines in the wake of climate change protests. And this hurt the valuation of airline companies, which are, you know, less directly tied to energy production, but nonetheless very vulnerable to shifts in public mindsets.
Yeah, you call it future-proofing their business. My dad was an insurance agent, and the one main thing they do is try to figure out risk. Well, that has become alarming. You know, you remind us that floods that were supposed to be rare are not, storms that were supposed to be rare are not. These people who have to figure out risk are probably, you know, spinning.
That's right. It's becoming difficult for a number of reasons. First of all, these large events that we're speaking about are becoming even larger. You know, if you think of Hurricane Dorian just last month, this was the second largest Atlantic storm to ever make landfall. And sometimes these events are not even very predictable. So Hurricane Barry in July caused the largest rainfall ever to hit Arkansas, which is not even the coast. And Barry was not a very big storm. These events are not very easy to foresee. But the tools that insurers use also are not really adequate to the task. They don't really factor in climate change. First, because they use data that typically cover the last few decades. So they kind of describe a world that doesn't really exist. And secondly, because they don't perfectly account yet for interactions between various phenomena.
Interactions between various things. You call this compounding effects, right? So a drought is in and of itself an element, but it also causes wildfires. But that's tricky, as you write, because droughts also keep brush from growing. So, I mean, it's really hard to figure it out.
It's very hard, yes. But to give you an example that's more straightforward and where there's been more progress, sea level rises. This is really going into just one direction. And the impact that sea level rises have on storm surges is already better understood. So we know that, for example, the 20-centimeter rise in sea level at the tip of Manhattan since the 1950s is responsible for 30% extra damage on the total destruction caused by Hurricane Sandy. So you can see that these compounding effects are sometimes very complex. Some of them are a bit easier to understand, but that's for sure. It's making the life of insurers harder in terms of quantifying the risk.
Look, you've said that insurers need to reinvent themselves, be the people that publicize what's going on, what it really means when someone says it's a 1-in-100-year event. But what do you really see for the future of insurance companies? Do you think private insurance companies can survive the climate crisis?
I think so. I think they themselves will survive the climate crisis because even though they are exposed to bigger payouts, they are required by most regulators to hold enough capital to be able to survive the worst year in 200 years. So even though it's really hard to know exactly what that means, because the worst gets worse every year pretty much.
Right.
But premiums being on the rise because of rising losses means that a larger portion of the economy will be uninsurable, which in the end means a shrinking business for insurers, which is bad news for them and for the rest of us.
Tell us more about what you think they should do to better survive the climate crisis.
So the first thing is more immediate, is perhaps to try and delay things becoming uninsurable. They can keep their costs lower. So, you know, they can digitize, they can automatize, they can send drones to disaster areas.
Yes, you point out that insurers are doing this, sending drones into areas after disasters to make sure there's no fraud, you know, to actually see for themselves what's going on. That cuts costs.
Yes, exactly. It's also because it speeds up the claims process. The second thing is something we already talked about, which is incentivize people to take less risk or to adapt to the risk. They can also, when risk become uninsurable, they can partner with the government to put together solutions which are not quite economical, but can still work out. But in the long run, it's very important that insurers try to understand better what's at stake. It's particularly true in developing countries where cities grow so fast from one decade to the next, which makes it really hard for insurers to really calculate what's at stake, what's at risk. So that's one thing they can research more, try to quantify more the risk in these countries. Also, they can put some of their models available for others to use to try and evaluate various solutions.
Open source them, so let other people see them.
And then finally, you know, some simple tools could be added to apps that you use to buy homes where you have maybe a risk rating or projection of how much you stand to lose perhaps from any major events. And these are simple solutions that would be in front of people very quickly and would make the risk really real for them.
Mathieu Favas, his article, Changing Weather Could Put Insurance Firms Out of Business, ran in The Economist's recent climate issue. We'll link you to the whole issue at hereandnow.org. Mathieu, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.